program, Catholic Apologetics, our reasons to believe, our fundamental theology, which are trying to show that using the wonderful gift of reason alone, not without having to prove things by revelation through the Bible, particularly in the teachings of the church, but that reason can lead us to know that God exists, that Jesus really fulfilled the prophecies as the Messiah, that he really claimed to be God, and he was crucified for that reason. He's blaspheming. I and the Father are one. So, and we talked about the miracles that proved Jesus really was God, that he was what he claimed to be. So we're in that new section now where we're coming to miracles not just happen in the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament, but that miracles are still happening today. So, Ron, my guest is, once again, Ron Eldred from John Paul II Catholic High, teaching history, church history, and world history, American history, as well as religion. And I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, Pastor Emeritus of St. Patrick Catholic Church in 19th and Poplar. Ron, we might start out with a reminder of what a miracle is, because our topic today is, do miracles, which were recalled so often in the Bible, both Old and New Testament, do they still happen today? So what is a miracle as we're talking about it?
Well, they not only happen in the Old Testament, but they happen all the way through the history of the church down till today. But for an event to be classified as a miracle, it must be extraordinary. That is, not an occurrence in the ordinary course of events. And it must be within a religious context. It cannot have some kind of a natural explanation.
No human explanation is possible. And
right.
That's what puts it into the category of being an intervention of God. Okay, well, do we believe that miracles still happen today, even in the 21st century?
Well, they certainly do. And I would say that if they happen today, it's reasonably certain that the stories we have heard about them in the past are true. In other words, if miracles are happening today, and we can prove that, then this makes it very reasonable to believe that the miracles we heard about in the past, not only in the Bible, but through history, are true, that they actually did happen. Now, of course, obviously, there are some miracles that are fables and myths and stories that were made up and what have you, but most of the miracles associated with the church, I think, the great majority, particularly with very saintly people,
And especially because they most of them have been very thoroughly investigated.
Yes.
And we'll talk about that in
detail.
Yes,
we will. Well, but miracles are, they are a continuation of the loving compassion of Jesus begun in the Gospels. And many thousands of attested and documented miracles have occurred in the 20th century alone. Events that simply can't be explained by a natural occurrence. Moreover, they happen in a religious context. Although God does perform miracles among non-Catholics, the great majority of miracles have happened to Catholics or are due to the intercession of Catholics, dead or alive. Now, we're talking about documented miracles.
Sure.
I mean, miracles happen to all kinds of people in all faiths.
Right.
But we're talking about documented miracles. We could literally take days, I mean literally take days, discussing the miracles that had been due to Our Lady's intercession at Lourdes and Fatima and Guadalupe and many other places, or miracles that have resulted from the intercession of people like St. Padre Pio, who was just canonized within the last couple of years, Father Solanus Casey. That's a fascinating story in itself, his life. In fact, he died in Indiana, if I recall right, up in the South Bend area, or no, Huntington, Indiana, about in the 1950s, I think, something like that. Then Blessed Brother Andre, a Canadian brother, and many thousands of other holy people. In fact, the Church has approved miracles due to the intercession of our own local Blessed Mother Theodore Guerin, who soon will be canonized saint. I'm not sure what they're going to call her. I think there's been some discussion as to actually what she's going to be called.
Theodora,
cause
okay.
Because the name as it is now is masculine, so I assume that they wanted to make that name
clarify.
Saint to clarify that she's a woman. But the founders of St. Mary of the Woods is who we're talking
and
about.
And be canonized on October the 15th in Rome.
Well, I believe you're going to that, aren't you?
Yes. What I thought. Please God, the airline's flying.
Yeah.
Well, Ari, let's take some more specific examples of modern miracles. Well, incidentally, one of the miracles that proved that finalized Mother Theodore's case was a person who wasn't a Catholic who went to pray at her tomb and was cured of what the doctor said was an incurable eye problem. And they sent the documents, they had all the documentation from the doctor's office and the like, and Rome accepted it as a second miracle.
Yeah, I believe the first miracle was a sister who was cured of cancer. Of Mudd was her name, I think, M-U-D-D.
Right.
I'm almost sure.
And I think it was maybe the early days.
Yeah, it was more like, it was sometime in the 19th century. I'm not exactly sure when. I've read
Right. I'll have to get Sister Marie Kevin on our program, who is the one who went through all the details to help the canonization get approved. Well, okay, there is one, an incurable eye disease that had documentation from the medical profession that there wasn't any human explanation possible of how this happened so suddenly and completely.
Among the types of miraculous events that have occurred are cures of hopelessly sick people suffering from terminal cancer, as we mentioned a while ago, Sister Mudd, and other deadly diseases. The restoration of body organs such as eyes and lost bone. In fact, I know of one miracle where the person had the sight restored, but there was still no optical nerve. I mean, the doctors, this person technically could not see, but they could see after the miracle. This was the Lord's miracle.
Okay.
The restoration of of hearing and eyesight. The preservation of the dead from corruption. Not an uncommon thing in the Catholic Church. There are many of these incorruptibles. Saint Bernadette, for example, of Lourdes, body is still in a perfect state of preservation since her death, and I'm not sure exactly when she died, 1870, somewhere in that. She was, I think, 33 years old at the time when she died. And even many documented cases of the dead being risen to life. Believe it or not, hundreds have been raised from the dead over the centuries, and in some of these instances, credible evidence exists to prove it. Most of the miracles occurring in history have taken place in the Catholic Church, which I think is logical since it is the mystical body of Christ, the source of all miracles. And miraculous events provide irrefutable evidence of the claims of the Catholic Church that it is the church founded by God himself. A description of other types of miracles would literally take a book. There are many reliable books written on the subject. Among the types of well-documented supernatural occurrences would be all kinds of mystical experiences, extraordinary mystical experiences such as ecstasy, rapture, levitation, which is, floating, literally floating off the ground. Auras, that's a light, a person lighting up. Locutions, those are voices. Visions, stigmata, the wounds of Christ. Fragrances, this is called the heavenly perfume or the odor of sanctity. Padre Pio was very well known for the odor of sanctity. Bilocation, that's being able to be in more than one place at a time. There's even cases of trilocation, three places at a time. Apparitions, those are appearances of the Blessed Mother or Jesus or some saint to someone. Private revelations, and these are the kind of things that are miraculous.
Now, when the church gets into this, there are some very strict, at least nowadays, maybe in the early days, miracles were claimed multitudinously by the intercession of this saint or that saint, and there wasn't any documentation process. But now today, let's take, for instance, at Lourdes, which is one of the miracle capitals of the world. What is necessary to verify a miracle that it would be accepted? There's some pretty stringent and tough regulations, aren't there?
Yes, one thing I would say about Lourdes, modern science has been employed to verify the occurrence of countless miracles during the 20th century. In fact, you were mentioning Mother Guerin a while ago. Any claim of a miraculous cure of some type or another is assigned to some kind of a committee of doctors that very carefully look at it from every angle. And they're usually, the doctors are not all believing Catholics. In fact, they usually make a point of putting even atheists or agnostics, people who aren't religiously minded people at all, on these committees. Because all they're really trying to do is to ascertain whether or not it can be explained by natural means. They're not going to, the medical authorities are not going to declare that this is a miracle. In other words, God intervened. Only the church has the authority, of course, to do that.
But the church is trying to exclude any humanly possible explanation.
Yes. Okay. Well, for example, the shrine at Lourdes. Lourdes, France, has a committee of distinguished medical doctors who carefully examine every claimed miracle at the shrine. And although there have literally been thousands of instantaneous cures of every imaginable disease and infirmity at the site, only 75 or 80 of them have passed the rigorous scrutiny of the medical committee. However, only one miracle is enough to prove that God exists. You don't have to have millions of them piled on one another. One occurrence of an event that only the intervention of God can explain is enough. And reading a book about the cures at Lourdes was instrumental in my own conversion to the Catholic Church in 1959.
Well, could you say a little more detailed word about that?
Well, the book I'd already studied the Catholic faith quite a bit, and by reading a whole series of books that the Knights of Columbus had put out. I was in the Armed Forces at the time, the Air Force at the time. They had a little library in the back of the chapel there on the base, and so you could go back in there and check a book out on honor system and fill out the card and put it in a box. It was a pretty nice little library. It had several thousand books in it.
In Alaska.
Yes, in Anchorage, Alaska. And so I found this book that was by a woman by the name of Ruth Cranston, and she was actually a Protestant, and this book was written in about 1956, so this was... It was only been out 3 or 4 years when I got the book in 1959. But what it was a story of the medical committee and of the 75 or 80 approved miracles that not only had passed the medical committee at Lourdes, but also had passed the authorities in Rome and had declared these miracles. And she told the story of each one of those 75 or 80 people, and these are things that just simply absolutely could not happen without some intervention, some supernatural intervention. And the book came out later in paperback. This would have been in the 70s, probably the late 70s, early 80s, and it was out for a number of years, but it's been out of print for a long time. I think it's a shame that... hasn't been in print now for a number of years, because it is a...
How influential was that? It was just another step in your swimming the Tiber, as they say, or coming home.
These were motives of credibility. You know, we spent a lot of time talking about motives of credibility earlier in this series, and they just simply made it more reasonable to believe things that I already was leaning, you know, very heavily towards. They just were logical. It just made sense. Just reading the books that the Knights of Columbus had. And I picked up, a Baltimore catechism somewhere and was reading that. And, of course, those can be pretty dry. And that's probably what turned a lot of people off in religion to some extent over the years, because they're not very experiential, you know.
They were very short, brief, to the point, very theologically absolutely accurate.
Yes.
Although I think I learned some of the best things I ever learned from the Baltimore Catechism. Why did God make me? To know Him, to love Him, and to serve Him in this life.
People need to know those things, too.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, they definitely
need to know both. All right. Well, now we still have processes of a beatifying a person and a canonizing a person. But I wonder if you'd say first that before we get into the miracle thing, you've got something on at the bottom there. The first thing is there has to be some kind of a heroic living of the gospel. That's the first quality that is looked for in anybody trying to be held up as an example of a holy person.
Oh, yes. Miracles in themselves are not going to be enough to cause a person to be canonized. Keep in mind, when the church declares somebody a saint, that just simply means it's recognizing that there's very powerful evidence, very credible evidence that that person's in heaven. And as you said, the first and most important sign is proof that they lived a life of heroic virtue and holiness. That's absolutely essential. And then the second thing they look at, which is secondary, and that's looking at any evidences that God may have given a sign that this person is in heaven. One of the first things they do is examine the body. They exhume the body and examine the body very carefully, although John Paul, I understand, tried to end that practice. But nonetheless, it was one that still is done, as far as I know. And quite often, maybe 1 out of 10 times, great saints, their bodies have been left incorrupt, that God has kept them from decaying. As a sign that they are in heaven.
I just mentioned
Especially close to him. I did mention St. Bernadette a while ago, but there are many, 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 many of these. In fact, I have a book called The Incorruptibles that has at least maybe stories of 100 of them in there and pictures of probably maybe 40 or 50. Some of them probably be best if they just buried them. They don't look too good. But St. Bernadette and the Cure of Ours, I might add, also looks perfect, just as though they died yesterday. And this is not a case of like Lenin, in the tomb in Rome,
Moscow.
Take St. Bernadette, for example, when she died, they buried her in the ground in the monastery or the convent cemetery. And it was many, 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 many years later that they took her up. Mm-hmm. And obviously there wouldn't be anything left but bones. Mm-hmm. And her body was in a perfect state of preservation. And her body was examined at least once or twice after that. This is when the process of canonization was going on, beatification and canonization.
Sure.
Because like I said, this is one of the first things they do. They examine the body just to see if the body still is incorrupt. And after that, then they really begin the process of looking at miracles that have, at least people claim that miracles have took place due to their intercession, due to their close friendship with God and praying for people cure. They don't cure anybody, of course, but sure. They ask God, they're close to God, they're living with God in heaven, and so they're his closest friends, and so they ask him, would you do this? Would you cure this person? And when God does, of course, so that's the kind of thing that they do.
It'd be a similar thing, like many of the prophets performed wonderful miracles, interceding with God for their friend or their person who was in trouble. So we just claim that people in heaven who are very close to God, can intercede for us here on earth, just as the saintly people in the Old and the New Testament did.
I've been reading a lot about Newman here lately and his writings, and he made a comment, he wrote quite a bit about miracles, because he thought miracles were powerful motives of credibility, yet at the same time not sufficient to bring, absolute certainty. I've been doing quite a bit of reading on Newman. He's written a lot about miracles, and he said that the Old Testament, this is from his study, of course, very careful study, because he was quite a biblical scholar, and quite a scholar of the early church, of the church fathers. And he said that miracles that were performed in the Old Testament were performed to help people's belief, to make them believe, so they would open themselves up to the infusion of God's grace, and so they would have divine faith, like we talked about earlier in this series. On top of that, he said, though miracles today are for a different reason. He said that miracles today, he thinks, are primarily for increasing believers' devotion, rather than trying to help people believe that who aren't believers. Miracles, Christ performed all kind of miracles, and still the Jews didn't accept him as a whole. They explained it away some way or another. Right. And I've seen more people do that myself today. When you talk to them about miracles, they might concede that these extraordinary events happened or whatever, but they don't see that it's something that's due to the intervention of God, and so it doesn't produce. It's not. In other words, it doesn't act as a motive of credibility for them.
Often I hear people say, "Well, we just haven't discovered what was the cause of that." And there might have been certain chemicals in the water that we didn't know about yet, and that's why they were curative waters at Lourdes and the like. Okay, well, let's go back to the idea of verifying a miracle. It's pretty rigorous and rigid for a miracle to be accepted by the Catholic Church today because of all the possibility of medical help and medical records and so forth, that we can prove something is just, there's no human explanation for it.
Well, the first process is beatification, and as a step, you know, toward canonization, and they examine, you know, miracles, they examine the body, they examine the person's holiness and virtue and all that kind of thing. And beatified saints or blesseds are venerated by the faithful in a locality. Whereas, like, for example, Mother Guerin, we could actually, you know, pray to her. You can pray to her anyway, but I mean, officially. The church has given, I don't know exactly what they would consider the locality to be, the United States or the state of Indiana or Vigo County or what, but nonetheless, she can be venerated, you know.
As a very holy person.
As a very holy person, and in heaven, but not something the Universal Church has declared. That's what they're going to do in the canonization process, which took another miracle and probably further investigation. And
of course, aren't there three steps? Declared venerable, very holy, according to lived the Gospels, and then extraordinarily holy, and one miracle was worked through their intercession, and then the third step would be canonization.
That's the second miracle.
With the second miracle that verified not only the, and they go through all their writings with a fine-tooth comb. You think it was the FBI looking for spies.
Well, at one time, the church had what was called in English the devil's advocate, appointed by the Pope probably to try to find something. I'm not sure they still have that. I think that was discontinued during John Paul's.
Is that right?
I could stand corrected on
that. I'm unclear myself.
But I'm almost sure I read that someplace.
But I always liked that devil's advocate.
Yeah, this was somebody who was looking.
His job was to find out this person wasn't what they appeared to
be. That's right.
Kind of a fake.
Yeah.
You know, a pious fraud.
Miracles that are due to the intercession of saints in heaven are incontestable proof that God exists. And because miracles are God's way of telling us that the dead person under consideration for beatification or canonization is in heaven. And as we said, a committee of medical doctors must verify that there's no other possible explanation for miracles attributed to the intercession of candidates for beatification or canonization than the intervention of God. And as we said, and when we're close on this, Mark, the most important consideration of sainthood is, though, that the candidates lived holy and virtuous lives.
According to the teachings of Jesus in the Gospel. Okay, well, now here's a kind of a tough question, but very important. Miracles aren't necessarily an absolute proof that God exists.
Surprising enough, no. Miracles are not as incontestable as mathematical logic, let's say. Their acceptance is not as certain as 2 plus 2 equals 4. In the final analysis, acceptance of the truth of miracles is a matter of faith or belief. If this were not true, everyone would believe in God who witnessed or heard of them. Nonetheless, many who see or hear of them do not believe. In fact, although the scribes, Pharisees saw Jesus perform many miracles, the great majority of them refused to recognize him as the Messiah. Unbelievers try to explain them away in some manner or another. Even the scribes and Pharisees and the chief priests acknowledge that Jesus performed these miracles, but attributed their cause to the devil or magic or And so consequently, they refused to accept him as the Messiah.
So the most a miracle can do is be something startling that cannot be explained humanly, and then a person can say, oh, well, I'm still not going to, there's something fishy here, and I'm not going to accept it.
I'd like to say something about the process for verifying the occurrence of miracles. It is a very rigorous one, and there are certain steps that they go through here. One is the malady must be grave and impossible or very difficult to cure.
And we're talking about physical cures, yes, not physical mental cure. Or emotional.
Yeah, the church would acknowledge how these things do occur,
sure.
Spiritual and psychological types of cures. But yes, these are strictly physical
cures. That you
cures.
Can verify.
Yes, and the sickness or the condition has to be grave, impossible or very difficult to cure. It must not be in a state of decline. There must be no use of a possibly effective medicine that they're using. The cure must be instantaneous. It's something that can't go on for months, you know, gradual, because that could just be a healing by natural process. The cure must be complete. There must be beforehand no noteworthy decline of the symptoms or anything that might provide a natural explanation.
Okay.
And then finally, the cure must be permanent. It's something that can't come back a year later or 5 years later. They may die of something else 5 years down the road, but they're not going to die from that particular illness or condition.
Okay, now we talk about the discovery of miracle drugs, and what we're saying there is something a little bit different we're talking
yes.
about. Let's distinguish that.
Well, God works through, he gives us the ability to use medicine, the surgery and medicine.
Discovery.
So God ultimately is the one who cures us, but we're co-creators with God, and we're also given the role of helping to keep the world, to keep the earth, and to maintain it, and to cooperate with him, and improving it, and this, that, and the other. And so God gives us the ability through medical science to cure, whether it be medicine, whether it be surgery, or whether it be some kind of drugs or whatever. So ultimately, of course, this is God doing the curing. But yes, we're making a distinction here of someone who has an incurable illness that's really grave, maybe about to die. And in fact, at Lourdes, almost all the people there, of the 80 or 85 people that Ruth Cranston talked about, were people who were almost dead right there in front of the Blessed Sacrament, or when they were put into the waters and bathed. And then instantaneously, these people almost jumped up sometimes and were instantly cured, yes. So that's the kind of cure we're talking about. Not something produced by surgery, not something produced by medicine or drugs.
And there are continuous miracle drugs that are
found. Sure, and this is God, though, working with, cooperating with man to cure people. And that's the way 99 and 99 hundredths and even more than that people are cured, of course.
And that's why we go to doctors.
That's why we go to doctors.
People intelligent study nature and how to cooperate.
I don't think God's going to like it very well if a person just sits around and prays for God to cure them and they have some real bad sickness and there's a doctor down on the corner that can provide him with medicine and some other ways, you know, to cure him that God has already given us.
Sure. All right. Well, I think we're coming to the close of our program once again, Ron. And I think we're going to take up the greatest miracle next round, the resurrection of Jesus from the stone-cold tomb of Joseph of Arimathea. So thank our audience for being with us. May God bless you always and in all ways.